Okay. I think it's about 12:30. We should get started. Okay. So, we are to day 14 now. Okay. We're going to start chapter 14. Partial derivatives. Monday, which is day 15, which is February 15 by coincidence. We have a test on days 1 through 9 material. I know some of you are disappointed there isn't going to be review day. I just didn't see how to fit a lot of reviews into the schedule this semester. But I was thinking about it. I will email you today a summary where I will try to compress as much as I can into 2 pages.
Oh, wow.
All right. Obviously, I can't put everything into 2 pages, but I can give you some highlights. Doesn't guarantee you success, but it might help you at least remember, oh, this is important. I better read more about this. I better practice this again.
Will I be allowed to use handwritten notes?
You can use handwritten notes. You can also use printed notes, including a textbook.
So if I have it in my spiral, it's always I can just bring my spiral.
Yes, you can bring your spiral notebook. You could bring your old homeworks. You could bring a copy of somebody else's homework, whatever.
Right?
Yeah.
Right. And we use our
own book. Yeah. You can bring a suitcase full of books and papers, and you can go through it. And by the time you figured everything out in your suitcase, the test will be over. And oh well. Yeah. Definitely bring a calculator. Turn off your phones. Right. Okay. So, chapter 14 stuff. What we're getting into in chapter 14 is functions where we take in multiple inputs, right? So, in calculus 1, calculus 2, generally the focus is on this kind of situation. You have x, a real number, you feed it into a box. It's a function, and the box spits out another real number, right? And you can graph all the possible combinations of input x, output y. So it passes the vertical line test. With calculus 3, we're also going to consider other kinds of situations. They're called multivariate functions. Multivariate is talking about how many variables, so things that you can freely vary, the inputs, think of them as your choice. And so the situation there is maybe you have 2 things, for example. So you have a point in the plane. And now this time your box is different. You need to give it 2 numbers, or equivalently a point in the plane, and it spits out a number. And now if you wanted to graph this, it's going to be a lot more work. But you could have something. What you could do is you could make you could like hold an x value constant, say, and then vary y, right? You get a bunch of different curves, and then you could try
making slices in the other direction, right? So here I tried different x values each time. And then you could also make slices where you held y constant. Make it something like this. And so you can get an idea of what the surface looks like.
And of course you can have a computer automate this process for you, right?
To get a nice view of the surface, you have to do a lot of slices and put them together. It would be a lot of work to do by hand.
But that applies also to the 3D graph?
Oh, this is a 3D graph, yeah. But yeah, you think of each of these slices is like a parametric curve, right?
Yes.
Right, you feed it the, you know, if you hold x constant, you think of the y values as being a bunch of t values, right? You could also consider stuff like this. Why don't I, maybe I should give these different letters so I don't mix them all up. But let that one. First one's F, second one's G. What if we had a point in 3D space? We fed it to a function. So input three real numbers, output one real number. You could think about that.
That's actually very natural in physics, say. You think of at any point in space, it has a certain gravitational potential energy.
This is a little bit hard to graph, put it mildly.
You can do some things, they're called level surfaces, but
the short version is you can't really graph this. You can think about it, but it's hard to see the whole, you can't see the whole thing at once. You can only see slices of it. So like if you hold z constant, then you could, at a particular value, then you could look at what happens as you vary x and y of this surface. But sometimes, it could be even worse than that. Maybe, you have, 17 variables in some sort of, because these are like 17 different things, because maybe you built this circuit, and there are 17 different pieces in the circuit that have 17 different currents running through them at any time. And you want to put this together into a function that tells you how much heat this circuit is dissipating, right? Because you want to make sure that this little gadget you're building doesn't overheat and start a fire, right? So you might have some crazy function, like that takes 17 numbers, right, and gives you an output. What's the next letter I can use? Use a Greek letter. Yeah. Don't ask me to graph that either.
Okay. Now, the way you deal with these things is in calculus, one of the things we do starting chapter 14 is we want to bring the tools of derivatives to this setting. Derivatives gave us lots of interesting applications in calculus 1. Like we learned, how do you find the maximum or the minimum of a curve, right? You're solving some optimization problem. How do you make things best, right, given the inputs you can change? Or just understanding, okay, if I change this variable, if I increase x, what happens to y, right?
Some places, on the curve, if I increase x, y goes down. Other places, I increase x and y goes up, right? You want to be able to answer these kinds of questions about in this more complicated setting. So over here, for example, I start to that question with this bivariate function g. You might ask, okay, if I'm at a particular point, let's say, just to keep things simple, I hold x constant, and then I change y, right? So if I increase y, I go down a little bit. If I decrease y, I go up a little bit. Or you could say, what if I hold y constant? And then I ask, what happens if I start changing x? If I go this way with x, it's kind of flat here. But eventually, if I go this way with x, I start going down. All right, so that I think that direction, this picture is increasing x, and that makes z go down, holding y constant. And then again here, holding y constant, it's kind of flat here, so a little change in x doesn't really change z at all. If you go far enough over here, holding y constant, bringing x down, also brings z down. Okay. So that's one way we can get a handle on complicated multivariate functions is hold all the variables constant except one. And just ask, okay, what happens if I change this one variable and leave all the others the same? All right. And that's what a partial derivative is. You compute the derivative with respect to one variable, treating all the others constant. Okay. So, for example, in the crazy case where I had 17 variables, right? If I want the partial derivative with respect to the 11th variable, right? I just take the derivative of v of all these variables, with respect to x11 with x1, x2, x3 through x10, and then x12, x13, x14, all the way through x17 held constant. Okay. That's how partial derivatives work. Just change one thing at a time and see how the output changes. Just change one input, leave the other 16 inputs alone, see what happens to the output. The derivative is that rate of change, output over input changes. So, a simpler example, with only two input variables instead of 17, okay? Let's think about taking the derivative with respect to x, partial derivative with respect to x. So that means we're going to treat y as a constant here. So pretend y is a constant, like 5 or something, okay? And then just take the derivative like you normally would. Okay. So the derivative of 1 is 0. Derivative of the x squared is 2x. Now here, we're holding y constant, so y is a constant multiple of x. Okay, so this is just going to be minus 1, right? That's the derivative of x times y, because we're holding y constant.
But is it going to be y prime or dy over dx?
No, we're treating y as a constant.
Okay.
So we're saying dy over dx is 0. We're on one of these blue slices here of constant y. Okay? So x is changing, but y is not changing.
I see.
Okay?
Yes.
And then here, negative y squared. Y is a constant when we're for the purposes of computing this partial derivative with respect to x. So the derivative of the negative y squared is 0. Yeah. It doesn't change. Right. The only stuff that changes is stuff that actually involves x. Derivative of g with respect to x with y constant. Questions or comments about this?
Even though y is constant, as you mentioned before, why you didn't put 1 times 0 after you got the derivative of the equation?
Because that's not how the product rule works. That's not how the constant multiple rule works.
Right.
Example. Okay. Let's make y actually 5. Okay. 1 minus x squared minus 5x minus 25. Right. Okay. Now take the derivative of this. Just take the derivative here. Now y is an actual constant 5, right? Not just abstractly held constant. 0 minus 2x. Now what's the derivative of negative 5x? Negative 5, right? So here, you really want negative 1 times y, right? You don't, because this term, when you make y 5, this term becomes negative 5, right? The y here is a constant multiple of x. Okay. So you factor out constant multiples when you do derivatives. And then, yes, minus 0. Let's try the other partial derivative now. Okay. So, okay. Partial g, partial y. This time, we are holding x constant and taking the derivative with respect to y. Okay. So. 1 is constant, negative x squared is constant, plus 0 minus 0 minus. Now, holding x constant, we have a constant multiple of y here. Okay? So think of this as, you know, maybe x is 4, right? And it would look like 1 minus 16 minus 4y minus y squared, right? It's just a constant multiple of y now, because we're holding x constant. So the derivative of y is 1 times a constant multiple of x. And then the derivative of the negative y squared with respect to y is negative 2y. If we'd actually plugged in a specific constant like 4 for x, we get matching results. Differentiating this with respect to y, derivative of 1 and 16 are both 0. Derivative of 4y is 4, which is the same as x. And the derivative of negative y squared is a negative 2y again. Right? You can see that they match. Okay.
Okay. See if I can. Here's an actual plot of this surface, okay? So 1 minus x squared minus x times y minus y squared. And I've taken two slices, a slice at x equals 1, a slice at y equals 2. I've plotted it with x between negative 3 and 3 and y between negative 3 and 3. Okay? Okay, so in this picture here, you can see that the green is the surface. There it is from various viewpoints. The x and the y are the input variables. The z is the output variable. Okay. It's bigger. Okay, so okay, there's x. So that red line, for example, attempt to go on. What's the x keeps changing it along that red line, but y is always 2 along that red line. That's a slice of constant y, various x's. Right here, I have that blue line. It's a slice where x is always 1. That's a slice of constant x's, various y values. Right, so the blue slice where x is held constant, if I take slopes, change in z over change in y along the blue one, that would be derivatives, you know, partial g, partial y, right? Partial z, partial y, if you want, right? Because there your y changes, but you're leaving x the same. The red one is where you'd have partial g, partial x, or partial z, partial x, because you're leaving y fixed at 2, and you are changing x. And so you can measure the slope. How much does z go up when you change x or y at tiny? Yeah, let's mix it.
So to get the slope of that,
you change x at tiny.
Take into account x and z, because since y is constant?
Yes, this one, the red one here, y is constant at 2. And so partial z, partial x, you'd be a measure of a slope at any point where you change x a teensy bit and see how z changes. Okay, so there's kind of, at any point on the surface, you can think of two slopes, right? There's the slope if you are moving along the surface with constant x, right, along that slice, or moving along the surface with constant y, right? I mean, if you're on a hillside, right, depending on which way you go, right, there are different ways you could go that make your path steeper or gentler, right? So there isn't any one slope. Now there are many slopes, and two natural slopes to focus on are the slopes for if you increase x a little bit but leave y constant, and the slope for if you increase y a little bit and leave x constant.
Can you also leave z constant, or is it y and x?
Well, you can hold z constant and let x and y vary. That is that's something we did in calculus 1 called implicit differentiation. Because if you hold z constant, that's like making a slice, horizontal slice, and you get some kind of curve.
This partial derivative stuff, the context is everything, right? What are the input variables? What is the output variable? Which ones are you holding constant? Which one are you actually varying, right?
Because you could turn this around, right?
Use the quadratic equation, solve this for x, right?
And get x as a function of z and y. And then you could talk about the partial derivatives of x with respect to z and x with respect to y, right? I guess here I'm calling z, the output variable, okay? All right, you could do that kind of thing. right? You know, basically turn this thing sideways or something, right? So that we've made, if I can do it, probably. Right? There, turn it sideways so that X is the vertical axis now, right? And figure out the slopes, right? But I need different slices. I'd have to do slices where I already got a constant Y slice there, but I'd need another slice with constant Z, right? Yeah, you could do that. A little trickier, but yes. But those would be different slopes, right? Yeah. You have to keep straight what's input, what's output, what's being held constant, what input is not held constant. So let's see here. So rotating it back here. So on screen here, here where the blue and the red lines meet, X is 1, Y is 2. Okay? So let's
do a little computation there.
Somewhere around there. Right? So in this picture, it looks to me like if I increase Y, right, and hold X at 1, it looks like Z is going down. Okay? On the other hand, it looks like if I keep Y at 2 and I increase this way, increase X, should be going this way, then again Z is also going down. So both partial derivatives look like they should be negative based on the visualization here. So we'll see.
Okay. Okay, so we have some formulas, right? Partial G partial X would be, we got it here, it's negative 2X minus 1. Okay, so plug in 1 and 2. So we get negative 2 times 1 minus 2. So negative 4. There's partial G, partial Y. What's our formula for that? It's going to be negative X minus 2Y. So negative 1 minus 2 times 2, negative 5. Okay, so yes, they are both negative slopes as indicated in the picture. Okay. We can go a little further. What about the value of the function itself? Which we were plotting as on the z-axis. Okay, 1 minus 1 squared minus 1 times 2 minus 2 squared. Okay, so 0, negative 2, and then a negative 4. It's like negative 6. I should be getting roughly that if I actually hover over it here. Yeah, it looks like about negative 6. Pretty close. Yeah? Okay. Okay. So we can interpret some of this now. So there's a... You can shut the door if it bothers you.
Okay.
Okay. Okay, so. Okay, so you might say that the. You might say something like. Like the changes in z versus changes in x, right? That would be this negative 4. Right? On the other hand, if you look at changes of z, changes in y, you get a slope of negative 5. Okay?
So,
we can make some approximations.
Yeah, so in particular, let's say you were at, so this was at 1, 2, right? So at, how about we change x by a little bit, but holding y constant, what if we make it 1.1, okay? What should happen to the z value? Right? If I increase x by 0.1, roughly what should happen to z? Will go up. Will z go up or down? Go down by how much, roughly? Remember how slope works, right?
Yes.
It's the rise over the run here. So delta z divided by delta x, negative 4. Okay? So the change in z should be about negative 4 times your change in x. Right? So it's going to be the negative 6. This is approximate, right? Because basically this is a tangent line approximation, right? So negative 6. Plus the slope negative 4 times the change in x, which was 0.1, right? Okay, so we have the partial derivative, and then we're making a tangent line approximation to the curve that we get by making a slice of constant y. So this would predict that we should get about negative 6.4. Okay. You can test that, right? How good is this tangent line approximation? Actually, what is it actually? 1 minus 1.1 squared minus 1.1 times 2 minus 2 squared. Okay. So it's actually negative 6.41. Where you usually get slopes from the derivative.
Oh.
Now, when I say slope here, I really mean, you know, this is tangent line slope, right? Right. We took a slice of constant y, and then the tangent line at, in this case, x equals 1, right? Has this slope. Right?
It's like in calculus 1.
But there's like this other variable lurking in the background, right? Here we held the y constant at 2, and then we thought of z as a function of x alone. And then we're doing a tangent line slope here by getting a derivative.
you use that same formula on top where the z equals gxy, but you just replace the value on the bottom, right?
Yeah. Yeah, the function hasn't changed. It's still...
You're just plugging the new values
from 1
and
2. Yeah, it's still 1 minus x squared minus xy minus y squared.
Okay. So this is,
other questions or comments? You've got another function you'd like to see me graph?
It's not initialized. Yeah. I'll do another one. Okay. Okay. Well, that's not very good. I need to tell it to plot more points so I can.
I think it's like. Whoa.
it's got a lot of it's pretty wavy, yeah. I can dial it down a little bit. That one's a little crazier. That one was that was sine of 5 times x times y. Yeah. We'll go back up to 80 maybe. Anyways, sine of 5 times x times y.
What's that one?
I don't know, if I zoom in, the green lines aren't so crowded here. There we go. It's still pretty messy. I don't know. That's pretty. I don't know. Okay. Well, anyways,
that's another example. Okay. So what would be
What would be the partial derivative here? If I tell you a y value, one trick you could just use is, if I tell you a specific value, just go ahead and plug it in, right? And the 10 popped out because of the chain rule, right?
Of course, in general, I'm blue on this fading.
Now, in general, you have to treat the 5y as a constant multiple of x when you're taking the x partial derivative. So a 5y would pop out. And if you did partial z partial y, then you're treating x as a constant. So the 5x is a constant multiple of y. So when you use the chain rule here, a 5x pops up. And I guess to answer this question here, at x equals 1, this would be 10 cosine 10. How I got this far?
Yeah.
Well, I plugged in 2 for y. Yeah? At y equals 2.
Alrighty.
Okay, and then here I'm using the chain rule, right? Here's the chain rule. In more detail than you could have ever wanted, right?
I'm not sure.
You won't have to wait for me to erase anything.
Functions.
You don't have to graph them for me, but if you want to satisfy your curiosity, you know, go to a website like Wolfram Alpha or something and ask it to graph it.
Your calculator, if you have a TF-89 or similar, it can go into a 3D graphing mode. So you can actually graph these on your calculator. Anyways, whether you graph or not, find some partial derivatives, figure out the values at these two base points, and then using the base points, estimate the values of the functions at some nearby points. Okay?